Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 70 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we have Brett Rothmeyer. Brett Rothmeyer, who is he's a cyclist, and he's also a photographer, and he's a frequent contributor to cxhairs.com. If you've been on that site at all, I'm sure you've seen his work, along with his work for Rafa and for Richard Sachs and for The Athletic and Peloton Magazine and many more publications, bicycling. It was great to have Brett in the basement and wanting to chat with him for a while. So it was good. We had a good conversation about cameras, about bikes, about just why we do what we do. And he may actually have a lower voice than me. So this one will be good, nice, soothing conversation for y'all. Health IQ still on board as a sponsor for this week. This podcast is supported by Health IQ. They are a life insurance company that celebrates the health conscious, including cyclists. And you should visit healthiq.com/cxhairs to learn more and get a free quote. And you can check out their life insurance frequently asked question page to get all of your questions answered. But go fill out that survey. Go support Crosshairs Radio. The life insurance, everybody needs it. You need it. They do good things for people who are in shape, people who are cyclists. They will have more forgiveness for a family history issue. They take into consideration low-carb dieters, which I think would be a good thing, but some life insurance companies actually ding you for that. So Health IQ knows what healthy people look like and what they do, and they're going to go and get you the best rates on life insurance. It's healthiq.com/cxhairs. Along with Health IQ, this episode, as every episode is sponsored by the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, which Crosshairs Radio is a part of. A couple things. One, new show I want you all to check out. We Got to Hang Out is an awesome show by Abby Watson and Elisa Fish. They've had some great episodes, most recent one with Katie Compton. So go to wideanglepodium.com and check out We Got to Hang Out, along with all of the other shows that are available. One programming note for Crosshairs Radio. I'm going to keep doing sort of these offbeat, off-season interviews with folks like I did with Brett this week. But also, we're going to start covering mountain biking. Pro cross-country mountain biking, Taylor Jones and Kevin Hayes, who have been guests on the show and contributors on the show before, are going to join me, let's say weekly, maybe every other week, and we're going to break down all of the cross-country World Cup and just professional elite level mountain biking races and scene. We're going to start with the Cape Epic. I think we're going to get a show in next week, and I'd love for you all to tune into that. I know if you just follow cyclocross and you don't follow mountain bike, I want you to give it a chance. I want this to be a new sport that you follow, because it's really exciting the way the cross-country mountain bike is run right now. It's very similar to cyclocross. There are some cool characters in it, great names, and I think it's something that you're really going to dig. So, you know, keep on tuning in to Crosshairs Radio. Please tell your friends about it. You can get in touch with me at feedback@cxhairs.com. You can call the helpline. Hey, ask us your mountain biking questions, 405-CX-HAIRS. And follow on Twitter, Instagram. Go to iTunes, leave us a review. It's been a while since we've gotten some reviews up there. We'd love to see your 5-star ratings and your reviews. Thanks to all who have left those so far. And that's about it. All right, Brett Rothmeyer, let's join the conversation already in progress.
You know, there's that whole science of like what your voice sounds like in your head and what it sounds like on recorded audio, and it's like totally different things.
Like, so, for all of us who are old enough, it's that first time you hear your voicemail message.
Yeah.
You're like, that's me?
That's, yeah. It's dude, it's so weird. I don't like it. But I won't be totally self-conscious about my voice at this point, so.
That's good.
I'm too old to care. Too old.
Not that old.
Yeah. Where should we start, Bill? Are we started already?
Yeah, I think have started. So you're down, talking about skating today. You're out skating.
Yeah, it's the consistent perpetuation of adolescent behavior that I try to keep going. Came down for some rock and roll and for some skateboarding, desperately grasping at youth straws, I guess. But any reason to come down to DC is I like it down here, for a lot of reasons. You know, all of my bike teammates are down here.
Heck yeah.
The music is good down here. The food is good down here. So
the music is pretty stellar. It's something that you don't get. Not that Pittsburgh isn't a great town. It's just that it's too far west. So it everybody is. Who does their basically their 95 tour,
yeah,
is gonna stop in DC.
Yeah, or the I-80 tour. Like we get bypassed for Cleveland because
that's right,
straight so shot to Chicago.
Yeah,
so. Sometimes we get lucky. It's picking up because, you know, more young people are living there. So bands are kind of coming through, and bands that couldn't sell out a room 4 years ago, now we'll sell it out. So we'll see. Maybe we won't get skipped over as much.
Well, that'll be good.
But then I don't have, what's my excuse for coming to DC?
Well, that was my problem when the cyclocross scene in Pittsburgh started to grow. That, you know, we started to see less and less of you all.
Yeah, some of us stay home. Some of us don't stay home though. So it just depends on what you want.
Yeah.
You know, if you want the big and the, you know, I like to see the pros race, you know, you want to see the top guys race, you want to race in a field that has 50 to 100 guys in it, then you kind of get in the car and you drive. And that's not knocking what we have at home. What we have at home's fun, you know. JR's done a great job to like create a local scene.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the whole ABRA scene. Yeah.
And he's actually taking a big step back this year. I think he's taken on another job that doesn't allow him to produce as many races as he's liked to do in the past. But yeah, it's good. The local racing's good. You know, it's nice to wake up at 8 a.m. and drive to a race to your house other than like leaving the day before and being in the car for 8 hours, or, which I did a lot this year, as I've done every year for like the last decade or so, I guess. So,
yeah, but now, you know, and one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is that you sort of got this cool dual role that I am extremely familiar with, where you still want to race, but also, you know, you're starting to get a lot more jobs photographing races as well.
That roles are becoming more singular than dual anymore.
I know how that goes too.
The bike racing is, it happens from time to time, but this year was a lot of driving to take photographs and to, you know, kind of try to document the scene as best as I can at this point. But it's still the same thing for me. I mean, I think that's the attraction for a lot of people with cyclocross is that it isn't just about the racing. Like, there's a whole lot of hanging out in cyclocross. The racing's like this really small window of your day. And I like hanging out. Like, hanging out's
great. Yeah, but then you're really good, I think, about when you get that itch, you know, which I think we all do. And it helps if you're in at least a little bit of shape that, you know, and you want to jump in a race, you're not opposed to doing that.
I'm not. No, I'm certainly not opposed to doing that. It's usually hindsight, you know, once the race is over, you think maybe it was best just to like, you know, leave the bike at home and put some extra camera gear in the car or whatever. But yeah, we'll see what this year holds.
So going back just athletically, you know, how did it start for you just growing up?
I think like all kids, you know, like someone signs you up for baseball, for soccer, for whatever. For a long time, it was baseball for me. I played up until I was like 13. It like, you know, as a competitive level as you can play as a 13-year-old on travel teams, like, you know, basketball, blah, blah, blah. And then at like 12, 13, I found skateboarding at the same time. And this, it's funny because...
Were you in Pittsburgh? Have you spent your whole life there?
I grew up just north of Pittsburgh, like maybe 9 miles outside of the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, where I lived wasn't, I mean, we didn't really know. I didn't know anyone that really skateboarded growing up, like physically, other than like the kids that just had like the toys. And my brother and I kind of figured it out. Like, we saw Back to the Future. I think that was like...
Really? So that was the end? Because that was going to be my question, because this is really, you know, you can't just go on the internet at that point and
Google
skateboarding.
I think that was it. We got, like, some cheap Volterra decks for Christmas one year and rode those until they were, like, obliterated. And then we were kind of like... You know, we still wanted to skateboard, and so we asked our parents. Actually, it was a roller skating rink. We had our local roller skating rink where all of the kids in our school went. I think it was either Wednesday or Friday nights. I think the bad kids gravitated towards Fridays, so obviously we went those nights. And they had a little skateboard shop with the roller skating rink, and I think that was my first exposure to, like, real skateboarding. It was that they had magazines and they had the boards and, you know, that's what we wanted. And then we went on a vacation to Ocean City, Maryland, and they used to have the Ocean Bowl and the giant blue metal vert ramp. And they had vert competition. Like, they had, like, real guys showed up and we saw it and were a part of it for a week on a family vacation. And then that was it. Like, I stopped caring about everything else. Like, baseball didn't matter. Soccer didn't matter. You just wanted to be at a ramp or wherever with your friends. So,
yeah.
So, and yeah, that I think that was, I mean, it might sound cliche at this point. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. And so this is kind of cool for me because I've been, like, podcast obsessed for, like, the last 6 months. And there seems to be, like, a formula for guys our age, my age, whatever, that, like, skateboarding is a gateway drug to, like, everything else in the world that, like, determines, like, what you're into.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, musically,
yeah,
you know, artistically, whatever. And, you know, the first time, and it takes a while to, like, really resonate with you, but, you know, you pick up an issue of Thrasher or you pick up Trans World and you look through it and it's like, it's so photographically heavy that it, like, eventually you're like, man, this, like, the way it looks, the way that everything looks is cool and you want to emulate it. And then, you know.
Well, going back to that, the guy I always think of coming out of that world is Spike Jonze.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, starting just skateboarder, getting into film, getting into photography, and now, you know.
There's so director. Many of
yeah,
them.
But he's just one of, a whole crew of people.
Yeah, I recently just picked up, I don't know if you're familiar with French Fred. I believe you pronounce his last name Montague. I'm sure I butchered that.
It's okay. That's people expect butchered names on this show, so you're okay.
But he just released, you know, like a coffee table book of his skate photography over the last 10 years, and it's all black.
Oh, did you post something about that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's all black and white, some digital, some film format, but it's gorgeous, and he's doing, like, I mean, it's honestly comparable to, like, Magnum photo work.
Mm.
Like, what he's doing is bringing something completely new, like, this new vision to the table for, like, what skate photography can be.
Yeah.
You know, more than just, like, let's light up a rail, let's light this thing up, and,
right.
You know, whatever. And, yeah, it's great. I think the guys that come out of skate photography or that realm are doing amazing stuff. So
did you ever do anything? When did you first, like, get into taking photos?
I mean, I think as a kid, like, I always played with cameras around the house.
Yeah.
You know, my grandma always had, like, crappy point and shoots or, like, a Polaroid, and you'd goof around and you'd try to take pictures of your friends skating, like, some crappy basement ramp somewhere. But it wasn't until, like, you know, mid-college freakout that I really, like, kind of turned towards it. I had, you know, recently purchased a camera. Actually, the one I still use, I have an old Pentax K1000. I bought it for $100 out of a pawn shop and started to shoot with it more and saw, like, what was kind of, like, capable with a camera like that, you know, like having something you could actually control. And after some community college and, you know, one stint at a local private school in downtown Pittsburgh trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, I dropped out, and there's a local film school, and I just signed up for a photo class and was just like, well, I'm just going to go do this because I like doing this on my own time, and then kind of got into it, you know. But photo for me didn't really take off until bike racing, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, the foundation was there.
Right. Well, that's what I was expecting, and that's what I knew about you is that you did it. It's almost like you had that training and that education, and then it just sort of laid dormant for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I always carried it around. I would always keep a roll of film in it.
Yeah.
And I would shoot it. Sometimes it would take me a day to shoot it. Sometimes it would take me 2 months, you know, but at any given time, there was always a roll of film in that camera and I would shoot and I would still pay attention to like what photography was or what it is. I just don't think I ever, there was nothing that like sparked it for me.
Yeah.
Even with the skating and with everything else, like I was too busy doing those things to be bothered to take photographs of it, you know?
It's kind of interesting with the film thing. I know that you've gone back to it. I grew up, both my parents, you know, were big into photography. My mom, even more so. We were at the, when I lived in Iowa, my dad worked at the University of Iowa. My mom was always like taking classes and I was like, you know, preschool in the dark room with her. We had a dark room at home, like all these film cameras, you know, I played around with a kid, but I didn't get back into it until digital hit. And then that was it. And I haven't gone back. And that's what always intrigues me. Like we went to the Beach Slang show last night and, you know, we're both shooting and you got your film camera out there.
I think it's, I don't know. Like there's like a burnout factor with everything.
Yeah.
And I think there's a big learning curve with digital that you can kind of accelerate. Because you see it real time.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if you're
used to... You can make those changes. Yeah. And also just even being able to like see the histogram and see everything that you can just like do it on there. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I like the idea of... I think at this point it's kind of like a challenge because the capabilities of modern day digital photography is like... And I'm not saying it makes it easy, but it kind of makes it easy in the fact that like... You can see it and adjust. So if you know how to work a camera, you know, via f-stop and shutter speed and your ISO, you can pretty much figure out an exposure within 2 seconds,
right? 3 seconds. Which is kind of funny how that new, or I guess it was last year or so, or Leica came out with that digital camera with no
view back.
no monitor.
When you
on
still
it.
Pay $6,000 for it. Yeah. I kind of this. This season for sure, because I think I did a lot more shooting than I've done in the last two, as far as like actual bike racing work and like actually paid work. And by the end of it, I was kind of like, okay, I know what I can do. I know what I can do with a digital camera. Yeah. Like I know that if I'm here in this corner and the light's this way and I take the shot at this time, I know exactly what I'm going to get.
Yeah. I do like how you make the distinction, and you know, I know a lot of our listeners know just from other shows that I've done with the whole money and bike racing tie-in that you make the distinction between bike racing and paid work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, it's whatever. And that's the thing too, is like, I have like no delusion of what the world holds for cycling photography. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you go to any given race and look around on the tape, you know, there's probably close to like a couple million dollars worth of photo equipment, right? You know, surrounding. Right. Even at your local race, I think at Charm City this year, you know, like I was standing on a corner and I turned around and looked behind me and there was a dozen people with the highest end cameras you could have.
Can I tell you that going to Japan for the cyclocross Tokyo last year, That times like 1,000.
I bet.
It was amazing.
There's a really good, and I recently just saw somebody ask if anyone still uses Tumblr. And there's a...
That may have been me.
There's a really good Japanese like camera fan page. Yeah. I got to remember what it's called, but it's incredible. It's just all old like film format Japanese cameras that are just...
I just was like walking around there and, you know, putting together this, you know, video I had to do, and just envy at every corner. I mean, guys, you know, these big stabilizers and out there, and they're just like, guys, you know, out for the weekend.
So bike racing cameras. Honestly, I think you and I have talked about this off air, and you know, you go to a lot of races. I would race early in the day and my traveling partner would often do the elite race, and so you'd have time to kill. You know, if I wasn't working the pit, which I usually was, you know, you're just hanging out with friends or drinking a beer or whatever, And I think it was the first year we went to Gloucester. I just took like a little crappy point and shoot digital with me. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to take my camera because it's Gloucester. Mm-hmm. And then I'd never been there before. And it was like this monument of, you know, U.S. cyclocross. I thought, well, I'll take a camera. Maybe I'll take a photo of something. Like maybe there'll be something I want to take a photo of. Not even think, like I never even considered cyclocross photography as being like a thing.
Right.
Or like an outlet that like anyone would care about. And I took it, I think I took like maybe 10 photos all weekend just walking around. You know, the camera was garbage.
Yeah.
It was, I would have been better off taking my film camera. But, you know, you do one and then you kind of see what it is and you're like, oh, well, I have all this time to kill. I'll take a camera. And I think it was the following year I bought a digital camera off of a friend. Because up until that point, I didn't have anything that was like considered pro or even like consumer. What is it? Prosumer? Is
prosumer?
That's what they call
there
it.
There you go.
Nothing in that level.
Yeah.
And so I bought a body off of them and used an old lens and then just kind of started doing it. And I was like, well, it's fun. You know, like you get home and it's the same way as taking a photo of anything. Like when it's good, it's like a satisfying thing. And, you know, you practice, you shoot, and then all of a sudden, like someone looks at one of your photos and says, oh, that's good. And you're like, yeah, right. Sure. You know, like you just like, you say thank you and you move on because you know, you're just like, I'm just pointing a camera at something and taking a photo. And then another person says something and then another person. And then you get like the crazy notion that like, maybe I can do this or maybe there's something in it. And I think I'm still there, you know, I still like ride this wave of like week to week. You're like, should I bother? Or maybe I can do this. So
I hope that's not uncommon because I'm sort of in that same boat with the stuff I do. I feel like that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I think maybe the people who think they got it all figured out are the ones who probably aren't really innovating or, you know, looking or improving or I don't know.
I think if you at this point are a cycling photographer and you're comfortable,
yeah,
and you don't feel like you need to like hustle or do something different or make big moves, you're either like, you're probably one of the guys. You're either Christophe Ramon.
Right.
You know, you're one of the big shooters that are like the Grubers or whoever, where you're editing images for other people when you're running magazines. Like, and even those guys, I don't think they ever stop pushing.
I don't think so either. And the Grubers are a great example because they are always trying different stuff.
Yeah.
And just putting out really, really just work that I think a lot of us look at and go, oh, I need to start doing that like that.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. I've tried to like really limit the amount of daily cycling photography content that I see. I mean, there's the obvious ones, like you've got in on Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I really like what this person's doing. Like these are new and interesting images as far as cycling is concerned. And then there's like the 500 spawns of that.
Right.
And then I really try to, I try to.
Ignore. Yeah. It's almost, I mean, you hear a lot of it. Like if you listen to like interviews with stand-up comedians,
yeah,
they don't want to listen to anybody else's.
No.
Cause then you don't know if you're just like taking their work or it's your own work, you know?
That's true.
You and know, style-wise.
Even from like a music standpoint, it's really hard because I think in any art, like you need to take out, it's obviously your influence from outside stuff. Unless you're just like a savant.
Right.
And you don't need.
And starting out, you should take in all of that stuff and try to steal as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I still think the way I shoot now, and I would probably be criticized for not being too focused on one thing and bringing something like very specific to the table, is that like if you don't try everything and you don't try new ways of doing things, like I just feel like it's a rut. And it's like there was even a point this year, you know, after the little thing I did for Rafa was that, you know, they wanted these post-race portraits and very mm-hmm. close and very intimate and very like this, you know, raw thing. And like, I had kind of done that stuff in the past, and then I did it there for them. And then afterwards, I just felt like I was always trying to like replicate that. That yeah. you're like trying to like ride the wave that there was like this thing that somebody liked. They're like, we really like that. And I got like a lot of positive feedback from it. But then are you establishing a style, or are you burning out one thing that you did once? You know, it's like one of those things.
I mean, I understand that insecurity, but at the same time, I think that your eye for that portrait work is something that I think that stands out that you do. And I think it's something that is definitely a strength in your photography work.
Appreciate the vote of confidence. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly one of the things that I enjoy most about cycling mm-hmm. photography. Because it's, I mean, like, you know how it is. You can stand on a corner and take a photo of a bike racer going through a corner.
Right. Well, and I think that's where you and I are kind of similar in that I'm not going to get the action money shot, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people who, you know, a lot of whom are our friends who are just amazing at that.
Yeah,
and they know how to do it, and they can, you know, get those shots. But it's I like the emotion. I like the sort of different perspective that maybe not everybody is shooting. And then it's faces and people and emotion.
For
and
sure.
That's the stuff that I dig.
Yeah. Like not to get like too super emo today, but it's like I feel like I don't think it stops at cycling. I think it's like in all athletics.
Yeah.
Is like you get these like really short windows, these small windows of where the rider, the whoever is like this really vulnerable window of like where there's no guard up. There's no sort of like pretense, you know? And if you catch them at the yep. right moment, you get like this like little brief moment of truth. Yeah. Where like there's no like charade, they're not putting like this face of I'm not hurting, you know, and that kind of like post-race scenario at the end of a very hard race is like, you know, it's been done a lot, but I think it's done a lot because of that reason.
Right.
You know, you get these little glimpses of like
but still being able to put yourself in that position to get those shots. And that's it's actually something that I was thinking about recently going back to Asheville and just my own experience where I was running around doing a lot of other things, but I still wanted to shoot. So I gave myself the challenge. It was like, I just ran around with a 14 millimeter lens and that was it. And from that, I knew I wasn't going to get, you know, Jeremy Powers posting up at the finish line with all of my friends in the scrum down there because they're all shooting 70-200, 300 millimeter lenses and they're going to get amazing shots. So I just hung out like 100 yards behind that and, you know, got him and Emily, you know, embracing each other. And I got that shot.
Which was probably one of the best of the weekend.
It was only because I had limited myself to a 14 millimeter lens. So if I was not like, you know, 2 feet from their mugs,
yeah,
I wasn't going to get the shot. Well, and I think that you will sort of have that same aesthetic where yeah. you're it's almost, I listen to something that's like creativity. Like people talk about creativity and not having any rules and breaking all the rules. And just from that weekend and going forward, I take the opposite effect where if you give yourself limitations, that sort of opens up a lot more creativity. So if you limit yourself to just film or you limit yourself yeah. to just one lens, then you have to be creative to make that work for what you're doing.
Yeah. I shot all of last year on just a 50 mil.
Yeah.
Because the restriction is like budgetary, you know, like it's like any other hobby, cameras are expensive and it's a matter of, you know, buying a lens or going to all the races. You know, or buying a lens and being at nationals or whatever it is, you know, you pay for travel, you pay for hotel when you're like a fledgling trying to make it. So you have to like limit your expenses on gear. Like I could stay home all season
right.
and buy a giant lens and, you know, shoot pictures of birds in my backyard, but that's not like necessarily what I'm trying to do. So, but I agree. Like I think, you know, and sometimes I get really intimidated at the races, because you look around and it's almost like an arms race.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's carrying a couple of bodies. They have these giant lenses that do everything. And I'm like a camera that was made in 2009 and a 50 mil lens on it. And I'm like, well, what, you know, what can I do? And so you just have to work with it. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, you just have to pick your shots.
Yeah. But I think that the end result of that is that people have seen your work and you're now getting this stable of clients that you're able to work for.
Yeah. Yeah. Slowly but surely.
Yeah.
It's nice. And it's nice to, it's a strange thing. I think I recently heard an actor say, you know, it's really weird when they start paying attention to you, because then you feel like you're doing something wrong, or it's like, or they're going to figure out that you're a fraud. And right. It's all, well,
that,
a sham.
I mean, it's all, the imposter syndrome is huge. You know, it's interesting too, because we talk about that in sports. I think that a lot of the sort of elite athletes in cyclocross that I've talked about, a lot of them feel that they feel like, you know, somebody's finally going to figure out that they're a fraud and they don't belong there.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about this. I love about talking about you is that it's not just them. It's everybody at a race that's sort of feeling that to a level. I'm feeling it every day for the work that I'm doing, what? Especially like the video work. I'm like, man, I gotta up my game, or
the
else
video work looks great.
They're gonna figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Gone are the days of just pointing a GoPro over the tape and,
oh man,
collaborating it together, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah. Well, something I'd like to mention now is, honestly, the effect of your photograph. And I wrote about this last year on your website.
Yeah.
That might have been like the tipping point for me in shooting races, is that I wasn't sure. Like, a lot of bike racing photography that I saw, especially like early on in my cross days, was just kind of like, you know, and it's not like a disrespect to the magazines or whatever, but it was like fellow news style, where it's just like, you know, race photos, finish photos, you know, there wasn't like a real like artistic angle to a lot of it. It was coverage, it was journalistic, and it was, you know, it's good stuff. But there was a photograph of yours at the year that Gernot was a complete hellhole, and it rained for
2009, maybe.
Yeah, the year of, I think Trabone won both days, right?
Yeah, it was either 9 or 10, yeah.
And it was like this really gritty black and white image with the tower and everyone kind of falling down on the way up the tower.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that and thinking like, man, that looks, you know, it looked like everything I had like studied in photography school. You know, it looked like this like kind of like Cartier, like the moment thing or whatever, just like this gritty black and white, like you did what you could with the shapes and the image and the light that was given to you. And instead of it just being like a square, like F9, everything in focus image, it was like this, you got like a feeling out of it. And I thought, all right, well, it's clearly possible that you can do this with bike racing, you know? And I don't even think at that time people were doing it that much with skateboard photography. You know, you just kind of went out, got the trick.
Right.
And it wasn't until like guys started to like really push the parameters of like what a photo is and can be, you know, it didn't always have to just be about the trick, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. That was like a big influence.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like that.
Totally.
Well, thank you.
Totally.
That was, yeah. Black and white, because figuring out white balance and color in that situation sucked.
Oh, I can only imagine. It's always de facto. And I think now you get like a little bit of like a gruff from it, because of like, you know, when Rafa came along and they kind of did their program, it was all very gritty. It was all very black and white and whatever. And
I still love it though. I still love it. And especially if I just don't like the colors. And that's the other thing about digital, is you don't have to pick the film ahead of time.
Yeah. Know?
And especially like on what I shoot now, a lot of the times, you know, so I'll still shoot raw, but when I shoot the JPEG in, I'll usually shoot it in black and white. And then that's a lot of times what I'll just use the JPEG.
Yeah. I'd love, you brought up like earlier with no back, but they make the monochrome, which is an all black and white digital photo.
Right.
which is kind of insane. They just and it's just it is also
it is an amazing it's truly like the emperor's clothes that they're doing that people are buying and a lot of this stuff. I appreciate it, I guess, if you have the money to do it, but man, I just couldn't imagine just
what's
spending
the deal?
That money just
it's
to limit
because
yourself.
It has like a certain it removes because it removes the Keller filtering, it gives you like more pure blacks or
I
whatever.
Guess so. Which is awesome.
We should have you should have Kevin Scott Batchelor on sometime. Yeah. I think he runs one of those. And
no, I'm sure they're amazing. I wouldn't turn it down.
No way.
I love it.
No way.
Same with like the Fuji medium format that just came out.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm not gonna turn it down.
Did you start plugging for sponsorships now for next season? Dear Fuji, if you ever want to sponsor some bike race photographers, seriously, Now's the time.
I know. But that's even like just the still photos now for me. I mean, we both went and saw Beach Slang last night, which was awesome. And
it was.
I felt happy that you were there. Not only that, we both sort of had our little security blankets and the cameras along with us, but also that it was another tall guy that was like, I'm going to the front and I don't care.
I was going to the front of that show anyways. I don't know. And I don't know what Beach Slang's booking agent was thinking on this tour.
Yeah.
And putting, I mean, I understand that like bands need to expand their audience, but man, that was like those two bands they were sandwiched in between might have been the most opposite.
Yeah. It didn't fit. And you know, and I know that I'm sorry, cyclocross people, friends. You're getting some music crossover in this one.
No, Stephen Hyde will appreciate it. It's all right.
Yeah. So minus the bear and then
Bayonne.
Bayonne, yeah. Which and there were people there, and that was one of the reasons I didn't feel so bad at 6-5, like going to the front, because I knew I wasn't going to piss off that many people because they weren't there to see Beach Slang. That actually, you know, I think was sort of James was a little he had his mission to like try to convince some of those people in the front to actually listen to them.
I've lost count at this point of how many times I've seen them play.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen him play a song with that kind of like oomph behind it, where like, I mean, they usually bring it live.
Yeah.
And it's usually spirited, but it's usually from like this really like kind of like celebration place with him.
Cause they know everybody's with them. So they're like using that energy of the crowd that is in their back pocket.
But he was punching,
he was working,
punching that guitar last night for sure.
Working.
And they we'll try not to stay on the Beach Slang topic too long, but man, the new iteration of that band.
It was fun.
They are good.
That was really good.
I'm not saying they weren't good with JP and Ruben, but they were really tight last night.
So bringing it back to like cycling and where that kind of is, at least for both of us, that's the bread and butter as far as it comes to making images. I love shooting music because, I mean, I put like a couple things up on Instagram. And I'll download and look at all those photos, but I probably won't put them up. It's like, it's just like, it's for me just to play around with, you know, and I even, you know, with that camera that I normally just shoot stills on, I'll shoot some video and I'll try to like cut it together just because it's fun. But it's such a different thing that I just love doing it because it's just fun. It's for me. And then I'll just sort of put it away.
I don't think it's that different though. Yeah. I think what you get from a guy on stage that's kind of, or girl or whoever, they're kind of giving it all.
Yeah.
And you get those moments, you know, there's like, and if
especially like late in the set, it's similar to that post race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, especially with music too. And I feel like bike racing's that way, is it's all so personal, like what you deal with in an hour of a cyclocross race, like what goes through your head and whatever you're expelling out of your body to make it happen. I don't think it's as different as writing a song that's like cathartic. And when you go on stage and you play it and you just dump it all out.
Like the writing's almost the training.
Yeah.
Like putting in all the time, the practice and everything else. And then the performance is the race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of bands really hang it out on stage.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it was interesting. I saw, it's the first time I saw Potty Mouth a couple weeks ago. And it was a good show. I mean, it's almost like Eraser, who is still going to be up there in the top five, but definitely like not into it for whatever. Their head's not there. That's how they were like. And it was really interesting because it just changed the vibe. Like, technically, they sounded great.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was a good show. But the singer came on and she was like, I don't know. This day has just sucked. And as soon as she said that, the whole crowd was like, we're here with you.
Yeah.
We want to see you. We want to see you put on a great performance. And you're basically telling us you're not into it. And it was really interesting because about three or four songs later, she came back and she's like, I'm an idiot. I'm sorry. Yeah. And then they, you know, ended it really strong. But it's just like, it's that same thing. It's that same headspace. It's the same, you know, having to put it online and perform. And it's almost the same consequences because you're, you know, win or lose.
If you're sitting on the line and you're like, oh, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably going to suck. Like, you're probably not going to have a good race. You know, that's not what you want to say to yourself 30 seconds before the gun goes off. But in Potty Mouth's defense, I was following along that week and she was terribly sick. So,
okay.
There was a photo of her like chugging NyQuil. So, So maybe that's what sucks. I don't know.
And she liked my photo of her. So it's all forgiven.
Always good. Always good. Always good.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? And this is like it's not restricted to the realms of cycling photography, but there is like this big push now and you're already on the end of it where, you know, basically if you're a digital photographer and you're not doing video, you're like behind everybody else. Like, do you think there's still a realm for still photography?
Oh, completely. Completely.
But actually taking a still photo as of now with the way technology's become is like you can run video and set your shot up the same way you would set up a still photo and then just take the...
But video is so mercurial.
That's true.
You know, it's like if you want to Instagram whatever else, you sort of look at it and it sort of goes by and then you have to look at it again. The emotional attachment to just photography is so much greater. It's so much better. Not to like shoot myself in the foot here since mostly what I do is video, but yeah, no, I don't think that'll ever go away. I mean, it's history that is just shot. That is basically frozen in time that you don't get from video. You know, video is almost the sugary pop single that you see it the first time. You go, wow, because if you capture something that's amazing, you know, freaking Joey, you know, flying over the barriers and crashing. That's something that, you know, it's a viral video. It's something that everybody's gonna see. But the long game of photography, I think will never go away.
I hope so. I mean, it's sometimes you wonder because like the magazine end of things is like, especially in the realm of cycling, is kind of like evaporating. You know, there's a lot of magazines.
But it's still there, you know, but it's just moved to Instagram or whatever is going to follow that it's still there. And I think galleries still people. Look, I struggle with it every day. I mean, my website right now, I love the things that I love and I just wait for is when you and like Bruce and Ethan and whomever else, you know, send me these amazing photos there and do those big pictures on. That's what I love. And I love being able to put those up there. But the other stuff with websites, it's tough. It's a tough game. And I think people have moved away from that just because it's such... We're sort of transitioning into this quicker and quicker stuff, you know, that people want to see.
Like for me, like, magazine work is like the end-all be-all.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like to have it in your hand.
Oh yeah, no, I hope it's still,
see it, you know,
I hope it still exists, you know, and continues.
I mean, websites are great. The bulk of the work I did this year was on websites,
yeah,
and I appreciate any of it and all of it, and I
But even the stuff like, well, going back to your original question, like, you can't do both. You can't do video and stills. I've tried. It's impossible. You're gonna do a shitty job on both. You know, you gotta like choose one or the other and then concentrate on that.
Yeah.
Because it's just, even though you're framing stuff the same, and I think that if somebody who grew up just shooting video versus somebody who moved over, I think I probably frame things a little differently just as a photographer going to video. But it's complete. They're completely separate things, and I think they will both exist. And yeah, even those as much as I was like horrified to see them in print, I was like, oh look, Brett, you know, when you took those shots for me for Peloton, that was awesome. Yeah. I mean, that was great.
I was a little upset they didn't use the tractor photo, but
I know the tractor photo was nice.
It's okay. Thanks, Clive.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Clive. But so getting this work, I mean, if people are out there and you're sort of, I know that you may cringe from this question, but you've gotten clients, you've gotten people to do it, and how do you do that? I feel like you're almost a different story where you didn't maybe hustle as much, but it really was the quality of your work that got you some of this work.
I don't know. So I guess it's really hard for me to like self-promote. So to answer this question is semi self-promotion, I guess. But a lot of it, I think the first little bits came from the stuff that I did with you. And so it like went to like a broader audience. And then, some of it was like cold calls, you know what I mean? Or like emails from people that were like, are you interested in maybe doing this? And of course, you know, like I'm at a point now where like I have a hard time saying no.
Yeah.
Even if it costs me money to do it, like I'm at a hard time saying no.
But I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think that's important. I was in that, I still am in that same spot where I'm not gonna, you know, we both have families, we both have jobs, we both have responsibilities. But on top of that, if somebody's gonna offer me something that is an opportunity, I'm gonna, you know, unless it's just, I'm not working for free anymore. I mean, I think both of us are at the point where that ship has sailed.
Yeah, working for free is like not an option. It's like, you know, bad taste on everyone's front, you know, and I know that's like, it's hard because you can watch guys that are like very well established and they'll be like, you can't charge anything less than this for your work.
That's kind of ridiculous too,
but
especially in the cycling realm.
Well, yeah, and but it's easy to say, and it's no disrespect to those guys because they've all put a lot of work in to get to where they are.
Yeah.
And I understand their angle is like, if you only charge this much, then it waters down what we're doing and then we don't get paid as much next time. But I don't necessarily think that that's true, because I think like the guys that have a set budget or they have a number that they know that they want to make, like they get paid that number because whoever it is that's paying them wants them specifically.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with cycling companies or magazines or whoever, like they have so much to spend for race coverage, or they have so much to whatever. So for somebody like me, who's like trying to get a foot in the door, you know, like, you know, race coverage is great. It's awesome. And it's what I like to do because, you know, it's like the essence of the sport. Like, it's not like there's nothing fake about it. You know what I mean? You're not like going on a photo shoot and you're like, make it look like you're going hard or whatever. You know, it is what it is. So what you get is what you get. But at the same time, there's nobody that I know of that probably makes a living off of straight race coverage.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
so you're
hard.
So you're kind of gunning for, I guess you would be gunning for commercial jobs or magazine jobs or whatever website is going to pay you to do work for them, and you take what they offer until you can get to a point where the work's steady enough that you say, okay, well, if I'm going here, I make this much or whatever. But if you're already pulling down major clients, it's easy to say, you can only charge this much, or if you charge this much, it's not.
And that's cool. Those are the guys, you know, and you know, we know many of them that have 5-6 clients at every array, you know, and they got to be bigger races. They're going to be C1s, they're going to be World Cups, that kind of stuff. But they're shooting for, you know, different teams, different industry, you know, component makers, whatever else. And that's sort of how you make it work. But it's going back to the original thought there, you know, and I think it's even like Chase Jarvis, who's this big commercial photographer, who's says your $500, you know, client is never going to be your $5,000 client. Yeah. But there's an economy of scale for cycling those $5,000 clients don't exist.
I think,
or if they do, I don't, you know, they're rare.
if they do, there's probably already 6 guys shooting for them already, and they're probably all really good. So you better be just as good, if not better, and willing to never be home and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
For me, you know, the whole, all of it is not like, I don't do it necessarily to like that it's going to be a living.
Right.
And I don't do it thinking that like one day I can quit my job and this is all I'll do. Like, I do it one, because I'm going to be there anyways. So I might as well do something else that I enjoy other than flailing around on a bicycle in the mud. And two, like, if there is some sort of end goal for me with cycling photography, it's to like just to go places and shoot. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, even if you break even, like just to travel and see it and be around like the bigger events and to go to new places, like that's always been my like reason for anything. It was the reason I skateboarded, you know, is like every time you went somewhere, you kind of went somewhere new. It was outside of your neighborhood, you know, like down the street becomes the next town becomes the next state, and so on. And then cycling was kind of that way too. And even when I kind of goofed around with music, it was like that. Like, it was never like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be professional, and I'm going to make money. It was always just like, let's see where we can go. Like, let's see what new thing we can find.
Yeah.
And I think as long as you approach it like that, like, it can't ever be venomous, you know, like you can get to a point where you're like, okay, well, I've done what I can do. I've put as much into this as I can put into it. And at the end of the day, if it's not a job or a career, like, I'll still do it. Like,
right. And that's also, you know, I think there are people in there looking to how they can make money with their cycling photography or music photography or whatever else. And your first priority is you have to do it because you want to do it, and it's fun. And you're right. I mean, it's the same way for me, and just being able to see all these amazing places and go and travel around the world and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. That happens from just like, picking up those cameras. It's the exact same thing. It was picking up that camera, you know, probably at the time that I took that photo you were talking about. I mean, that was just a year or two in, just from doing cycling photography.
And I honestly, at this point, if I didn't have the camera and I didn't have the photo thing going with cyclocross, it isn't necessarily that I wouldn't still be going to the races to race, but I would probably do more of the local stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just easier. Like, you're not away from home, you know, you can sleep in. Like, you don't have to pay tolls or gas. Like, you just wake up and you go, and it is what it is. And but it's cyclocross in America is like kind of a special thing. And I know, like, there's a lot of people involved in it that, you know, and a lot of racers and whoever are like, we have to make this more like Europe. Like, we need to compete, we need to do this, we need to do that. And like, I don't necessarily think that's true. I think anyone that spends enough time around the U.S. cyclocross scene sees that it's like this, it is like, and it, maybe it's cliche to say that it's like this tribe, and and it's grown over the years. Like, it's grown exponentially, even since, you know, and I came late as far as most people involved in it. But it went from, I raced Nittany in 2005, 2006, somewhere in that range, when it used to be out at Fogelsville at the little school. And it went from 15 to 20 guys in the elite race, you know, Jamie Driscoll was still in college and flogged everyone, to now it's at this, you know, thousands of guys show up to race, and women and whoever, and they you know, Jeremy Powers lines up, the national champion's there. It's like every weekend's a big race in this country. And everyone's like kind of friends in a weird way. Like you see guys, you know what I mean? Like you might not go get dinner with them afterwards, but you say hi.
Yep.
You know, and everyone's familiar with each other. And it's like this, it's kind of a cool thing. And I've never been to Europe and experienced it, but I doubt it's that.
I don't think it's like that. I think it's more professional. And you see it, you know, going back to the media scrum, you see it at the World Cups in the U.S. with the European guys who come over. And I swear, and there are a couple like Belgian photographers that I always keep my eye on because they always crack me up. But I think they just look at all of us and they're just like, "The hell are those guys doing?"
Yeah.
But for me, it's awesome. But that's not to say that some of the European guys like Balan Hamvas is awesome when he comes over here and he's fun to hang out with. And that's a that's another thing that it's almost similar to racing for me, in that all of the photographers, all the media people you see, you start to see the same people and you become friends with all of them. Yeah. Everybody looks, even though everybody's shooting for their own clients, everybody's looking out for everyone, you know, and even to the point that, you know, if there's a good spot, I don't care. I'll tell somebody, I'll be like, you got to go check out X, Y, or Z.
Well, it doesn't matter because they're going to do something different than you anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I, everyone that I've encountered the last couple years, you know, like I'll be the first to move out of the way because I know most of them are working and they're all very good. And I got yelled at once by somebody at Charm City the year that Hyde beat Page to win. Was his first UCI win?
Yes. Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah.
And again, all I had was a 50 milliliter lens. So I was kind of like squeezing the gate, like waiting for him to finish. And there was a guy there that was working and he yelled at me that I was in his shot. And I was like, well, I was here first, kind of. But then I was like, whatever. I'll just move. But
that's douchey, though, on that part. I'll,
but aside from that, yeah. I think it's really cool. And it's, I think it goes back to the same thing with, like, everyone involved in the scene is it's very, like, everyone's kind of, like, really cool with each other.
Yeah.
Like, you see each other most weekends, you know. I'm sure there's other weekends that they have other things they're doing or whatever. But like there's the people that shoot cross in the US are really good. You know, everyone that's there are really good and they're doing impressive stuff. And there's never a point where I'm like, you know, you see a magazine cover that one of them got and you're like, damn it, why can't it be me? You're like, you're like, fuck yeah, dude, that looks, it looks awesome. You know what I mean? Like, what, you know, it just looks great. And like, it just like makes you want to do better. It's just like bike racing. You know what I mean? Like if you get pissed because the guy that started a row in front of you beat you, then try harder.
Yeah.
You know, like just try harder. Like, and I guess it's not the same. I know it is the same.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Well, what I love doing, and especially I think it's in just having this team, having this Crosshair Cycling where it's sort of a, for me personally, it's sort of a mix between guys who want to go race and then like media people.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. Like even Asheville and now even this year, even though it was freaking plague ship up in Hartford. It was cool. It was
somehow
cool.
I escaped that.
I know. I don't know how you did that. I don't know how you got out of Hartford. I'm usually
the first one to go down, but that was scary.
Yeah, like Bruce and I were just like the death room. And
yes.
And then I think everybody else just followed from that.
Yeah. Taylor brought like some thing that he had for like 4 months. I think he still has it. I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, just having all of us out there shooting and doing our own, you know, it was like working broadcast stuff, but you know, you and Ethan and Bruce out there shooting. That was awesome. I love that. It's like being on a cycling team without actually racing. It's sort of fun.
It is, yeah. It's cool. Like, you know, you take up a block of a hotel hallway and do your thing. You don't have to worry about like what you eat or drink the night before in some cases. yeah, I'm excited for Reno.
Oh yeah. Reno's gonna be sweet. Are you gonna do any other World Cups?
I would like to go this year for the week, because I guess it's for me to go, it doesn't make sense to go and come back. I think I would
so basically just
yeah
go to I guess what's Iowa's first? Iowa, then Madison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. We'll see what happens.
Hire Brett.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
See if we can line anything up.
I'm sure you'll get some work.
I come cheap. Burritos, a couple beers.
Oh, no. That's not true. You're gonna sell yourself. But no, I mean, the stuff you done, like you did Rafa, was you did nice work for there. You worked for Richard Sachs' team doing some stuff for them.
Yeah, it's all fun.
A couple magazines in there as well.
A couple magazines. That's gotta be exciting. All of the blogs.
Yeah.
I covered a spectrum of blogs this year. No, this year was really cool.
That reminds me, though, I want to ask you about also, because I've, maybe to your chagrin, dubbed you the poet laureate of cyclocross. The thing that you add to this on top of just taking the pictures is the writing aspect of it too, and it's the kind of thing that I hope people who are familiar with my site, you know, from the photography and everything else, is that I like cyclocross. I'm not necessarily going to give you the results of every race that happens. That's not really, you can find that stuff out there. I want to give you a little different perspective, and that's what I love, what you did this whole last year, just giving these stories that, you know, you start reading, you're like, the hell's Brett talking about? And eventually it will come back and tie into something to the race that you're doing, and just, you know, matching that up with the photos. I absolutely love that series.
Thank you. That was great. Some of it's by default because I have to drive usually a long way home. So there's no point in me writing about the race because somebody's already done it in the media room or in the Starbucks down the road, and it's up and on by midnight. So I can't really compete with that, nor do I. I don't think I do it very well either.
At this point, it's like with Twitter and everything else, just straight up tactical race reports. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'll get feedback on it that people still want that. But I figured that ship has sailed, and so I'm looking for something a little deeper.
Well, writing's like one of those things where I think I'm more insecure about the writing than I am my photos at this point. But it's always been something that I've kind of wanted to do, but it's like hard, you know, it's another one of those things where you're like putting yourself out there, but I didn't want to write things that were necessarily like, you know, it's hard because you want to write something that like you feel like is right to write about, you know, like you, it's like that you're actually writing something that's like personal and it's to you. And so I think the first couple I did and I sent you, I was like really worried about, like, I was like, was this the right thing to do? Like, I was like, it's not necessarily about bike racing, but it's about, you know, I think when I write them, I think about everyone that I know that's involved with cross. And I think a lot of us come from this, you know, we're all kind of coming from the same place. You know, you look like, if you're competing in a sport, regardless if you're 19 or if you're 30, if you're not professional, you're looking to get something out of it more than just results, you know? And like, and I think people try to find that in a lot of stuff. You know, you either find it through like sports or through reading or writing and somebody else's words or your own words. And I just wanted to write stuff that like was like as honest as the photos that I was trying to take, you know, like you want to write something that's like personal. And if somebody else identifies with it, that's cool. Cause like all of the things that I read and have and still read, like the ones that are the best are the ones that are just like really personal, honest accounts of things that you can identify with, like stuff that's happened, you know, cause everyone lives their life. We're virtually all the same. You know, a lot of us go through all of the same things. You think that it's like you're the only one. And then you find out that there's 1,000+ people in your neighborhood that go through the same thing. So, I just try to keep it, I don't know, real.
Keep it real, man.
Keep it real. I mean, I think there's just parallels to everything. Yeah, I don't think.
Completely. I think that's what people find to go back. And you can, it's cxhairs.com and just search for Brett Rothmeyer on his byline in there.
I think some of it too, and I actually got to do a little bit of work for The Athletic, which is Jeremy Dunn's new project and business and storefront and whatever else they're doing. And he created Embrocation, which at a time there was like this real void of anything that would be considered like, I don't know what you'd even call it, like alternative cycling or,
right.
you know, like
embarkation, a cool print magazine.
Like something
of its time.
That was just looked different. It wasn't just like, it wasn't straight race coverage. It wasn't Euro. It wasn't Velo News. It was like this other thing about like people that ride and race bikes that do it just because they like to do it. You know, and there was like this really like the writing in it was really good. It was like kind of that angle of like, we're just going to write about what we're doing and what we see and what we do. And it's not, maybe it's not about like results or data or whatever, but this is how we approach cycling. And I found that at a time that I was like kind of trying to figure out if I belonged in cycling or not, you know, because like we would do the local races and there were a few guys that I was friendly with, but like the bulk of it seemed like, like office jocks, you know, like guys that just wanted to go fast.
Yeah.
And they wanted to have the fastest looking bike and the fastest wheels and all that. And I never, you know, I wanted to go fast. That's why you race a bike. But I never cared about like having all, you know, I just wanted to ride my bike.
Right.
And my favorite time riding a bike was when we just went and you saw, new, you know, same with everything else. You go new places and you experience new things. And
yeah, you and Steve-O seem to have a lot of adventures like that.
Yeah.
Or used to.
We'll see if he doesn't get me killed this June in the mountains. But but so when I first saw Embro, like it really resonated with me and I liked what they were doing. And I was always like a fan of that work, but I never felt like it was something that necessarily I could do. And then with the stuff that I did with you, and some of the other people, like, you know, I got an opportunity to do a little writing and photo work for them. And it was like, you know, it was kind of like a big deal. And,
yeah, you know, it was, I mean, a big deal.
Like for me, it's like, you know, I've always been a fan of what that guy's done, you know, even like his work that he did with like the Continental and with the Rafa thing, like he was always good at creating like interesting content, you know? And like, so to be asked to create some content for them was really cool. And then the work with Rafa was, I mean, I don't know if there's anyone shooting photographs and cycling that doesn't want to do work for them. They're lying to you, I think. You know, if you don't want your images associated with that brand, you're crazy.
I know, and they take a lot of flack, but they're awesome to work with. I love working with those guys.
I mean,
I think that what they do is, I don't know. I think it's a cool aesthetic. I dig it.
They changed the game.
I understand that people want to give them a hard time and tease it, but that's fine. That means you're doing something right.
From a visual and marketing standpoint, like in cycling, it might have been happening other places. You know, maybe there were other brands doing things similar, but as far as cycling's concerned, they up the scale.
Yeah.
And they brought in guys like Ben Ingham, who was Richard Avedon's goddamn printer. You know what I mean? Like that guy is, he's the real deal. And I don't know if you follow him on Instagram.
I don't, I will now.
He doesn't ever post it. I mean, it's just like goofy stuff. And I love it because he is like, he's an absolute, like his work's incredible. And you know, the stuff that Daniel Paisley did for them to start the North America thing, him and Brian Verner both, like their work's great. And and like their work being out there made everyone else want to do better. You know, it changed it from just being a snapshot of a guy around the corner to like creating a story and whatever else. And it's cool. It's cool to see it in cycling now where it used to be, you know, that kind of stuff was like kind of held to like National Geographic or like, you know, these magazines that were like, they were trying to create this sense of adventure and like kind of allure to like what's out there. And, you know, now it's in cycling and it's cool. And we can, you know, there's more. I think that's for people that aren't bike racers. I mean, even people that are bike racers, like there's stories to tell, you know, and if it's through an image or it's through words, like there's a lot of cool stuff out there.
And that's it. And that's, you know, and that's, I think that's what has already, you know, brought you on this, this path of success and lead you there. It's the stories, and it's just being able to tell the stories, and it's either just through the pictures or with the writing involved. And that's, I think that's really the challenge that all of us face who are trying to do some of this work is finding those stories and being able to tell them.
I think it's finding them and then trying to do it your own way too. You know what I mean? Like it's easy to go out and recreate something that people have already done, you know, and I think you kind of see it time and time again, you know, everyone's doing like, you know, these like big rides, or they're documenting this or documenting that. And it's, and all of it's great, you know, the work and all of it's great. But I think now it's like, it's really hard to figure out something new,
right?
You know, to another way of like bringing like cycling to the table in a light that hasn't been shown.
And getting it away from trying to like, it's really easy to do it almost in a reality TV type thing or whatever. Yeah, I know. It's going to be interesting. We're going to have to figure out that next chapter and how to cover it.
Maybe it'll come from outside of cycling. I don't know.
It's possible.
Very possible. Always have to be watching. So,
yeah.
And looking. I name dropped a lot of cycling photographers tonight, even though I say I don't try not to pay attention, but those guys kind of like paved the groundwork for everybody else.
Yeah.
In like modern, as far as the North American cycling scene is concerned.
So, going to do any racing this coming season?
We'll see. I've committed to some oval racing back in Pittsburgh.
Fantastic.
So we'll see if that, you know, turns into any form come September to suck some dust.
Outstanding. And so World Cups, anything else you're looking forward to for the upcoming season?
World Cups? I'd really love to go to Europe this year.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's like one I haven't done, and every year we kind of talk about Christmas Cross and if it's possible or not.
I mean, that's the funny thing with me is like I have so much invested in cyclocross, but I've never been to a European World Cup or European Worlds. Been to a lot of mountain bike ones.
Yeah,
going back for that, which is freaking awesome.
Yeah,
I love it. I'm stoked for the opportunity, but it's kind of funny that I've never done the cross. Maybe we should figure that out.
Yeah, Christmas or Worlds. Where's Worlds this year?
Worlds is, I'm blanking on it. I want to say it's back in Belgium, either Belgium or the Netherlands.
As long as it isn't an industrial complex with an endless parade of like metal shards or whatever was going on that course.
Oh my God. They made for some good racing. Where is Worlds? I'm going to have to search for this. It's going to drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, 2018. I'm on the 2017. I already know where that was.
Is it on like one of the classic courses this year? Or is
It's Valkenburg. That's right. Oh. Valkenburg. Yeah.
Okay.
The mountain bikers course.
So, all right.
That could actually be pretty awesome.
Is that the one that Lars always wins?
I was just going to say that's going to be Lars Vanderhaar's world championship.
Tell him not to get hurt, I guess, right?
Lars and Katie Compton.
Yeah.
They're your world champions for next year.
Save it for the end, Katie. Yeah. Although she'll probably never retire. She'll be.
Well, especially next year. I mean, you figure with Valkenburg, which she always does well there, and her commitment to racing more in Europe. So maybe this is the year.
Back to Europe?
Yeah.
After stomping the East Coast all year this
year. Yeah, so she's doing the whole, the whole Dave series, I believe.
Oh,
so she'll nice. She'll be missing out on a lot of the U.S. UCI races, but it's okay. I'd rather see her over there kicking ass in Europe.
Yeah, I think the listeners would also like to know, if anyone's listening, that Katie Compton, like all of us, eats Chipotle after bike races. So
there you go. Fantastic. And so when will we see you at a race? Probably Charm City, definitely be there. That'll be a good one.
I'll be, you know.
Are you going to go to Rochester? I'll be at Rochester.
I'll probably be at Rochester.
All right.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to change courses again this year or if it'll be where it was last year.
I think it's going to be the same location.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll be there. Hopefully it's not 95 again.
I'll probably see you before then.
I'm sure you will.
We'll have to go see some more shows.
Indeed.
Yeah. Brett, this has been awesome.
Thanks,
Thank you.
Bill.
Thanks for hanging out in the basement.
Thanks for having me over.
All right. Thanks to Brett for joining us for that show. That was a great conversation. You can follow him on Instagram and on Twitter at Brett Rothmeyer. That's BRETTROTHMEYER. Follow me at CXAirs. Also, give us a shout at feedback@CXAirs.com. Also on the hotline or the helpline at 405-CXAirs. And thanks to Health IQ for sponsoring this episode, healthiq.com/CXAirs. Go fill out that survey. And we will talk to you next week. Little mountain bike action. All right, later.